My stuff has just been all messed up. Did you ever watch Gabby? Did you ever watch the I know you listened to it, but did you ever watch the YouTube thing where when I went on Dewey Pod Monster?
I watch everything that you're on YouTube on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the last 5 minutes or whatever, when I'm trying to plug the show, I'm just like
I tried to fill in for you.
No,
I
you did a great job. And then of course, like as we were wrapping up, I finally figured it out.
it kind of hit a point where I was like, I'm not going to drag this out for this part when I could just fill in the blanks here. So,
Yeah. All right.
although
Is
I
everything
kind of was enjoying watching you like unplug shit and get all mad. So,
Well, that was
we
like
get so mad.
was at the height of my technical difficulties because that was like the third time that something had gone wrong. And I was just like, all right, fuck it.
It's hilarious that you had difficulties for so long, and I finally got you the same computer that I have, along with you giving me the same equipment that you have. And now I'm the one that's having problems.
Well, you had problems with the microphone. You didn't have problems with the computer.
Old Bessie's lasted me 10 years. She's going to last me another 10. Mark my words. I love this bitch.
Have a computer that lasted 10 years? I'm impressed.
Yeah.
What
Yeah.
about two?
Just still play the Oregon Trail on
Got a
it.
stack of computers here, only one of which actually turns on, and most of them are just, I don't even know why I keep them. So.
Hello and welcome once again to Podcast in the Woods. As always, I am your host, Boomer, and joining me is my wonderful and amazing co-host, Gabby. Gabby, how are you doing?
Fantastic.
I was trying to get that introduction out before you finished chewing, so I'm doing very
Can
good
you hear me
tonight.
chewing?
No, I was just watching
I'm
you.
not gross.
I didn't
I'm
say
not
you
gonna
were
like
gross.
smack my lips in the fucking microphone. That's gross.
Best food
I
is
will suck my
delicious.
teeth though,
Okay, well,
but I'll
please don't.
mute first.
I was about to say, please don't do
I'll mute
that.
first. God.
Well, I am doing extra good tonight. Well, both of us are. For one, you got to choose the movie, which we will talk about here in a little bit. So it's not something that I subjected to you to this time. But also, our good friend John is here from Dewey Pod Monster. How are you doing, my?
I'm doing good. I have whiskey. I'm here with friends, and I'm surprised I'm not being subjected to something more painful. So,
That is true. Gabby, this was your opportunity to get John back for Bloody Muscle
John Booms
Bodybuilder
has,
and
surprisingly, Booms is the one that has big plans for you for next year.
Oh, I do.
In fairness, she did already get me back for Bloody Muscle, whatever. She made us watch fucking Bukkake Bus, and that was just the funnest part of whatever year we did that. So.
I am so used to calling it Bukkake Bus at this point. What was it called?
Paranormal Highway.
Hey, oh,
But
yeah,
Bukkake Bus
eesh.
is a way better title.
It certainly
And you
is.
know what? That 70-minute long fucking Papa John's commercial, my store-bought frozen pizza, still better than fucking Papa John's.
I think the way we phrased it was these guys are praying to the altar of the dick of Papa John's or something like that. So, yeah, it was fucking terrible.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. Like, there is no way that like corporate Papa John's like sponsored this movie. It had to be like they knew Ralph, who was the general manager of like, Grover's Bend, Indiana Papa John's, and he supplied them, and so
Probably.
they were like, "We'll put your shit in the movie."
Yeah, or it was just the closest place that they had a coupon for.
Isn't Grover's
That's
Bend the
also true.
Critters Town?
It is, which is, yeah, deep cut reference.
Hey, look at
Nice.
me.
Nice. Yeah, you're doing well. Nice job, my friend.
Is it a real town?
I don't believe
We
so. And
talked about this on our Critters episode.
We did. I don't even remember. I don't think it is. But we are
Well,
going
we
off
drink
on
a lot.
tangents
We don't
as,
remember anything.
yeah, no. All right.
Tangents are what podcasts are made for,
That
though.
is
So.
true. That is true. But before we get into the topic, because I actually want to talk about this topic at some point tonight, but before we do, John, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you?
So you can find us at our spectacularly named website is crap.town. And then you can find that's where all our episodes live in perpetuity. You can also find us on the You Run Podcast website. We're a member of their podcast network now. And then we are on every fucking social network available as at Dewey Pod Monster. If you search us, you'll find us. Oh, and we have a YouTube channel as well, which is also at Dewey Pod Monster. So we try to be, you know, all over the place.
Nice. And as always, guys, those links will be down in the description. I actually did it right this time. We absolutely love Dewey Pod Monster. Every time an episode comes out, like that day, I'm listening to it because it's phenomenal. So, yeah, I mean, whether you want to go back and check out Bukkake Bus or I think the newest one, I say that now I'm like, what is the newest one? It's not Violent Night. It is. No, it's A Wonderful Knife came out to. Yep. Yesterday.
Yes.
I'm gonna listen because I really want to know other people's opinions of that movie because I watched it and I have a lot of thoughts.
I won't spoil it. I will just say I was not nice to it, so, or maybe that does spoil it, so.
I'm not gonna spoil it. It's a big piece of shit. No.
Well, yeah, but yeah, I had opinions on it. I rant. I don't know. Anyway, I'm off topic. We're not talking about that piece of shit. We're talking about a different movie.
We are talking about a movie that is not a piece of shit. It is 1980s The Shining. So, Gabby, this was your pick this week. So why The Shining?
Obviously.
Obviously. Okay.
Because this is one of those movies that I've seen so many times, and I've watched it with others, and I've watched it on my own, and the one most interesting thing about the experience of watching this film and discussing it with other people is I think that this is one of the most broadly interpreted films that I've ever seen. And I love to hear what other people have to say, whether they love it or hate it. Everybody kind of takes it a different way. And it's just so cool to me to see next time I watch it after talking to somebody through another person's eyes to see what they saw that I missed or to see what they thought was happening as opposed to what I thought was happening. And there have been many times, including my most recent rewatch for tonight, that I caught something else that I didn't even realize before. And I've seen this movie, I can't tell you how many times.
Nice. Like, you may be a bit disappointed when it comes to me. Like, oh, it's about ghosts.
So I kind of want to ask, since you have both kind of like touched on this, what subgenre do you consider this movie? Is this a goose ghost movie? Is it okay? Is it, because you could make an argument that it's a possession film. You could even make an argument that it's a slasher. So how do you really like subgenre this horror movie?
I mean, you're right about that. This is one that is a little hard to categorize. And it's kind of like what Gabby said, that depending on what your viewpoint is on this, it definitely changes the subgenre that it would be in. So me, like, I take a lot of these things at face value. So I'm one that believes that, yes, the hotel is haunted and it's fucking with them. So I believe that this is a supernatural film. So there are things in it though that is confusing, and I'm sure we'll get to the picture at the end and what the hell all that shit means, and you're always the caretaker and all this bullshit, but there's a lot of stuff in here. But to me, there's a lot of times that I'll take things at face value, and this is one of those times. So to me, it's just a supernatural film.
Yeah, but see, okay, that's why I say psychological, because of what I said earlier and the way that you just described your interpretation and the way that John's going to describe his, is that the fact that a movie can be so universally creepy and scary, and if nothing else, it's interesting, right? It affects everybody in a different way. You can't put it into supernatural, possession, family, whatever. It doesn't fit into anything but psychological, because the actual subgenre that this belongs to is dependent on who watched it. And that's however it fucks with your head, that's where it falls into. But if it's not universally falling into, you know, the same thing from every single person that's watching it, it's psychological.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Well, John, where do you come down on this?
I think there's times where I kind of dabble in wanting to call this a slasher movie, because when I think about it, it's the iconic, you know, Jack with the axe doing, you know, slasher type things. But if you really think about what this movie is, that's a very small part of what actually happens in this movie. When I watched it this time, and I watched a bunch of like behind the scenes and making of stuff, and just felt like kind of dumb after watching those, but when I watched the film this time, I felt like it's more of a possession movie, and what you're slowly watching is this hotel kind of take over primarily Jack, but really the entire cast of like the three main characters, this whole family. It's just engulfing all of them, because even if we want to go with the belief that Danny and Wendy get away, because you don't see them die in the movie, you can't, that's still that this experience would have to stay with you, so it's going to end up possessing them too. And I never saw the sequel, so I don't know how that fucks with Danny as an adult, but I would put it more in the possession category than anything else, just because it definitely has ghost elements, definitely has slasher vibes to it, but I think ultimately that's what ties it all together.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's also like, it kind of touches on something that I wanted to talk about, but let me do the IMDb before we get into that, because I did want to touch on just kind of what kind of character Jack Torrance is, or, you know, whether this is, you know, the hotel is having as big of an influence on him as it is, or is he just kind of a shitty person to begin with, which, I mean, we do find out that he is, but, you know, just how far that goes. But we'll get into the IMDb, and then we'll dive further into this. So The Shining, 1980, a family heads to an isolated hotel for the winter, where a sinister presence influences the father into violence. While his, I was going to say psychotic, it's psychic, his psychic son sees horrific forebodings from both past and future. Of course, starring Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall, Danny Lloyd. And I love like the little trivia about Danny Lloyd in this, where Stanley Kubrick did not like let Danny Lloyd in on the fact that they were filming a horror movie. Like, he thought he was filming a family drama. But yeah, Shelley Duvall.
How do you explain that with some of the scenes that he's in? But
yeah, I know, right?
Agreed.
Yeah.
But I mean, Shelley Duvall was well aware that she was filming a horror movie in, you know,
living a horror movie.
Exactly.
Poor Shelley Duvall.
I know. That's
it really sucks, because I really wonder if this movie just, I know she's got a ton of credits after this for all kinds of little bit things here and there, a lot of voice acting and stuff like that. But I really wonder if this movie just like derailed her whole career. And I know she was a model before this, or I had heard that. I saw a picture of her before this movie not that long ago. I was like, holy shit, that's the same woman. Like, Kubrick really like did not do like many favors for the character of Shelley Duvall.
No, he certainly did not. He was kind of a dick. Very famous. Nobody liked working for him. Who was it? Scatman Crothers like talked about how like fucking insane that Stanley Kubrick was. Like, not just to Shelley Duvall, but like to everybody. He was just kind of an asshole. But I mean, that is kind of what they say that geniuses can be. And I mean, this film is pretty genius. I mean, it really is. Then Barry Nelson, we got a few others, but let's dive right into this. So I have to ask one question before we get into the character of Jack Torrance. Did The Simpsons ruin The Shining for you?
It's my favorite Simpsons episode. I'm glad we didn't have to wait till the end of this to bring it up, because it's a like 12 minute clip in, I want to say, Treehouse of Horror 4 or 5, something like that. And the scene where Homer's in the cabinet, he says, "Can't murder now," eating as he's stuffing his face, will forever be my favorite Simpsons moment, or one of.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty funny. Gabby, did you ever see that Simpsons episode, the Shining one?
No.
We got to watch it at some point. Yeah, my favorite part is, I put a GIF out there earlier. It's the Shinning. Don't you mean Shining? You want to get sued?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Those first like five Treehouse of Horror episodes, basically up until they did the Nightmare on Elm Street one, were all just so good and so like classic and really stand. Because Gabby, did you watch The Simpsons at all, or were you just kind of not into them?
I did when I was super young. I mean,
okay.
I watched it from the beginning until, I don't know, for a few seasons. I watched a couple Treehouses of Horror. I actually have a VHS tape in my closet that still has the original recording of that year's Treehouse of Horror. And that's, I don't so know cool. what year it was, but it
probably
was
worth
the same
some money
year.
Believe it or not.
Yeah,
but, oh god, it was like a home recording.
It's
it wasn't
still
like
probably worth some money.
It also has the original airing of the Seinfeld episode that George and Elaine go to the flea market, and I think it's called The Parking Space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has that on it too. And I actually think that maybe Treehouse of Horror or Seinfeld, one of them I think interrupts the other one.
They were on different channels, so that'd be interesting. So
yeah, my dad, he went to night school. He worked all day because he had the family, and he went to college at night. So that was during kind of Seinfeld and Simpsons heydays that he went to school every night, but we recorded Seinfeld and Simpsons every week for him because he had class. So I'm sure there are other episodes on it. I always just watched The Parking Space because that was hilarious.
Yeah, that's really neat.
I can't argue that.
Like we said, you should probably check eBay. I mean, you may be able to hawk that for a few bucks.
Especially if you got all the old commercials on it and stuff, you'd be surprised.
So. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a couple VHS tapes that are all recordings of, do you remember Alternative Nation with Kennedy on MTV?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I have with the commercials and all of that. And yeah, I would go to bed and I would just start recording because, you know,
I'd be lying if I had said that in the past 3 months I hadn't taken an edible and just watched old 1980s and 1990s commercials while laying on the couch and chuckling. So,
oh, they're so fun to revisit.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
that stuff. Yeah. Very nostalgic.
That
the
is...
old cars. Damn.
Oh my God. The old cars are shitty. No, let's.
No, it's hilarious. Cars. The all new Cadillac Coupe de Ville starting at $17,990. Like,
all right,
yeah, the
car. Oh, actually, yeah, the $18,000 Cadillac. Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's get back into this. So, Gabby, we'll turn it to you first. So, Jack Torrance, like, where do you fall on him as a character? Like, is the hotel, is it fucking with him, or is he just psychotic? Like, where do you come down on him? Or, you know, as, I mean, you can even talk about, because I know people have talked about Jack Nicholson as this like everyman character, and does that really work or not? So however you want to approach this, feel free.
You just threw a lot at me.
I sure did. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just go one by one. So I'm going to start with Jack Nicholson as everyman. Jack Nicholson is any man. He can do whatever he wants and play whoever he wants. He's amazing. Jack Torrance is a character. Okay, before I answer your question, I'm going to ask you guys a question. Did you read the book?
Yes.
No, I did not. No.
You didn't. John, did you read the book before or after you saw this?
After. It was when I was in high school, so it's still been over 20 years now since I've read it, but it was after I'd seen this. It was actually after I saw this and right after I watched the TV miniseries, and then I read the book to try to figure out what the hell I was missing.
I didn't love the book.
I didn't either. I also didn't like the TV miniseries.
The TV, because it was almost like page by page to the book. Yeah.
Yep.
I always wonder if it's like a chicken and the egg kind of thing. Like, if you saw the original before you read the book, is that why you like it more? If you read the book before you saw the original, is that why you prefer the miniseries? Like I've wondered that ever since the miniseries came out. But as far as Jack Torrance as a character, you can't talk about Jack Torrance without talking about Jack Nicholson as an actor. Jack Nicholson took Jack Torrance. So there was the original Jack Torrance who was in the book. There was Stanley Kubrick's interpretation of Jack Torrance that he presented to Jack Nicholson. And there was Jack Nicholson's interpretation of Stanley Kubrick's interpretation and his execution of that character. The character himself, the way that he's portrayed by Jack Nicholson and shot and presented to you by Stanley Kubrick, is absolutely fucking genius, because you don't know what kind of a person Jack Torrance was before. Nobody knows for sure. Was he always a really great family guy, or was he always this tyrant nightmare of a drunk? Like, who all he wants is to be a famous writer. He wants to be famous. Fuck his wife, fuck his kid, fuck his career as a professor. He didn't care about any of that. He wanted to be a famous writer. Jack Nicholson's portrayal of him is spellbinding. But as far as Jack Torrance himself, as Jack Nicholson plays him in the film, he's always been a dick. He's always been kind of a little bit of a megalomaniac, I think. Everything that he does, I think, is to further himself. He loves Danny, but he loves Danny because it's the late 70s, early 80s, and his wife gave him a son. And he'll take care of his wife for the rest of her life because she gave him a son. And a man has a son. You know, like, he is still kind of in that little bit of that, but he also doesn't want anything to do with it. So he's always been an asshole. He doesn't want anything to do with the family, but he sure as shit wants that family standing next to him when he gets all of his accolades. The fact that he cares so little about his family that he will sit down in an empty bar and say, "I will sell my soul." Not for a $20,000 bottle of whiskey, for a glass of beer, you know?
Yeah, Jack Daniels.
He doesn't care about anybody else. He already knows that there's something wrong in here. I believe that he believes Wendy when she tells him that something happened to Danny in room 237. He just doesn't want to deal with it because sucks for Danny, but it's great for me. Too bad. What were the other 37 questions that you asked?
I mean, no, you pretty much yeah, you pretty much nailed them all. You really did. Now, I have the same problem when it comes to, and I'm not sure if you're right, like, this is Stanley Kubrick interpreting Stephen King and then Jack Nicholson making that interpretation on, you know, Stanley Kubrick, and who knows what kind of direction that he was getting and all that kind of stuff. But I have, if it is supposed to be that Jack is this everyman and he was like a family man who made a mistake, and he was an alcoholic before, now he has quit drinking and is trying to reform himself and all this, and he's supposed to be a good guy, it's hard for me to see that in the person of Jack Williamson.
Who's Jack Williamson?
Jack Nicholson.
Oh.
Close enough.
I had to take a second there. I was like, wait a minute, what close did enough. I just say? That was awesome. In the person of Jack Nicholson, because he is such a sinister person to me anyway. Again, I saw Batman before I saw this, so it's hard for me not to see the Joker, like, raising Danny Torrance. And when he's telling, like, just for instance, whenever they're making that drive up to the up to the hotel, and he's talking about, like, the Donner Party, and he's like, yes, you know, and then they had to resort to cannibalism. and then, you know, the, like, Wendy is, like, a little put off by it, and he's like, no, he's seen it on TV. It's like, it's just everything that he does in this is just so sinister to me. Like, the way that
I think that's
oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, the way that he looks, All his mannerisms, like everything, is just so kind of skeevy in a way. We'll turn it to you, John. What do you, where do you come down on this?
So I think as far as Jack Nicholson or Williamson, the actor, this to me is the performance that I think of with Jack Nicholson. Like, and I love, you know, I love The Departed. I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Easy Rider and a handful of other movies of his. He's a renowned actor for a reason. But when I think of an actor that's really embracing a role, whatever that means, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a more iconic single character than this. And then you say that and you can make up all kinds of ones like, oh, you know, whatever. This is up there for a reason. If you were to say, hey, what's the top 20 characters in all film, not even horror, just film, I bet you the majority of lists are going to have this version of Jack Nicholson in it somewhere in that top 20. When it comes to Jack Torrance, the character, this character is supposed to be built off Stephen King's interpretation of the Everyman. This movie was also released in 1980. I don't know when the book came out, but having grown up in as a child of the 80s and a teenager of the 90s, he kind of seems like an everyman to me. He seems like a guy who drank, who fucked up. His wife took him back. He might abuse his wife. She certainly acts like he's got some abuse syndrome going on with her throughout the movie. He says some really questionable things by 2023 standards, but by 1980 standards, it's just kind of run-of-the-mill normal stuff. Yeah, just go ahead. Let your kid drive the you know, big wheel through this entire kitchen full of knives and sharp objects and burnable things, no problem. So I think the intent of his character to be the everyman who's, you know, doing whatever they're ideally doing in this movie is believable for 1980s America. Where it really goes off is watching The Descent, which into whether it's madness or being a ghost or whatever the hell you want to say happens to him in this, that's where he really goes off and kind of makes this role his own, whether it's Kubrick or whether it's Stephen King or whoever pushed him into that. I tend to think it's just Jack Nicholson being told to act like a psychopath and this is what he's doing. He sells it so well. He makes it very believable. And what he really never does is he never lets his crazy go crazy. And by that, I mean, he's nuts in this movie. You can see it in his face. You can see it in his eyes. You can see it in his mannerisms. But he's never, like, for lack of better like comparison, like Gary Busey chewing the scenery with all of his incisors. Like, he does a little bit of chewing like scenery in this, but he never goes to a point where it's like, you know, if I was being chased by a crazy man with an axe, I think this is fairly accurate to what it might seem like. You know, it never goes beyond that. It seems all within the realm of possibilities, which I think a lot of credit goes to him for not overacting it, even when he's clearly off his wall, apeshit crazy.
Yeah, very true. Very. I could see that. Like I said, it's just, I don't know what it is. And I think that probably is just a little bit of the, like the Batman and that kind of stuff, just coloring my, coloring my perception of the character. But Gabby, do you think that, so we kind of talked about, you know, the acting and all that stuff a little bit. Where do you come down on this being, like John was saying, like a possession film? Like, do you think that some, like most of this is in, that is in Jack's head, or do you think that like this is everything that's shown is actually happening? Like, where do you come down on the Overlook Hotel?
Well, the genius of this film is that I don't know. Nobody knows what happened to Jack. Nobody knows if Danny and Wendy even fucking existed. When you get down to it, they left. He died. How do we know that they were even real? He's a creative person. He's a writer, and he's also off his fucking rocker. Maybe he made up the wife and child so that he could get the job, so that he could be at the hotel alone. He takes that tour mostly alone, and he does introduce Wendy and Danny to the other people, and he introduces them obviously to Halloran. But does Halloran has The Shining, So what is The Shining? Is The Shining that Halloran can see and communicate with dead people? Or see what's not really there? I mean, like, there are so many different things. He is obviously a disturbed man. So is it a possession? He says specifically, I will sell my soul for a drink. The most basic of drinks. He's not selling his soul for, you know, the most expensive bottle of wine on the planet. He's selling his soul for a fucking beer. He doesn't even get a beer. He gets something better. And when you see that, it's just a very, yeah, very quick shot. Very quick
arguably
shot.
Arguably better.
But it, well, maybe better tasting, but you know how people are snobs. But when he takes that sip, and it's not the first sip, he takes that sip as Grady, or not Grady. What's his name?
Lloyd? You're talking about the bartender, Lloyd? Yeah.
When Lloyd's talking to him, and he takes that sip, and it is a very, very short, maybe it lingers on him an extra second and a half, that he closes his eyes, and when he opens them, his eyes do something really fucking weird.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah, that was wild.
I think that's when he gives his soul up. There's a giant fucking party, and everybody is celebrating. If you were in fucking 1920, whatever, that you're in your little flapper dress, your little suit, and your little fucking doing the foxtrot and the Charleston across the room and fucking being all kind of crazy with your feathers and your cigarette holders and shit, and some guy walks in jeans and a fucking jacket. Who the fuck is this guy and where are you from? Covered in an avocado cocktail? Let's talk about that for a second. Ew.
The guy I'm hanging out with.
Hey, like, brother.
Nobody bats here to party, an eye. So. Nobody bats an eye because these are all souls that have been taken by the hotel. So is he crazy? Is he crazy because of what he heard about the hotel? Is he crazy because he was just crazy? Is any of this happening in reality? I mean, think about it. There can be how many? John, you're from Michigan, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you grow up with, or how many people did you grow up with that had cabins? You didn't go to your cabin during the winter time. You didn't have, well, I mean, where I come from, your cabin doesn't have, it's the same as the overlook. You don't have winter mm-hmm. road access. So what you do is you winterize your fucking cabin. Granted, yeah. It's not a fucking giant hotel, but nobody had to go up to the cabin to check on it or stay there or fucking, you know. So the fact that Jack Nicholson is so good at what he does, and there are times even after he goes full on, what the fuck, you can still see a little bit of a struggle. It keeps you on your toes. I don't know if it's possession. Or if he's just fucking nuts.
I don't know.
I buy that look you're referring to when he takes that first sip. I think that's actually a genius like response from Jack, because it looks like an addict rediscovering their vice. I don't know if you've ever had to experience that. I hope you haven't. It kind of sucks to have to go through.
Every day at 5:20.
That's not the same. That's just fun. But that's what it looks like, is someone taking their first hit back. Is and just kind of losing themselves in it. Now there's a lot of movie to still happen after that, so that's a whole, you know, other can of worms. But I always thought, you know, coming from a home that has had addicts in it and having plenty of that to had to deal with in my life, whenever I see that, I'm like, yeah, I've seen that face before. That's familiar territory. So
the fact that he makes that face, he says, I'll sell my soul. He gets what he needs. The addict gets the hit that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes that face. Who are the demons? Who is possessing him? Is it the hotel? Is it his addiction?
I don't know. I've just, like I said, I know that I'm kind of surface level, but I've always just accepted it as like there is something supernatural going on in the hotel. And yes, that obviously he comes to it with like his own problems and his own anxieties, his own like issues, and the hotel is using that against him to basically get what it wants. Like it entraps these souls that it takes. So every time that it ends up like fucking over somebody's life, that this hotel envelops like that soul and it gets stronger and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know how Saturday morning cartoon of that, you know, I am or whatever, but I mean, that's just the way that I've always interpreted it. But I did want to like touch on one of my favorite scenes. And that's like when Jack is talking to Grady in the bathroom, like Gabby, like after he spills that drink on him.
Please and don't fucking say the N word.
This is always my favorite scene. No, but like when he's talking to him and he's like, he finds out what his name is, and he's like, and it's almost kind of humorous in a way. And he's like, "Are you a married man, Mr. Grady?" You know, because he's kind of like putting these things together, like, okay. And then that's when we get that line, like, "You have always been the caretaker." So like we've kind of talked about the character of Jack Torrance, but this ties right in with like that ending where, so he's frozen in the snow at the end, and then it cuts to inside of Overlook and there's that picture of him. So is Jack a reincarnated ghost, or is what the fuck is going on here? Do either of you have like a take on that?
His soul was consumed. He became part of the beast. Hotel is the beast.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you go into,
he's a trophy.
Even if you go into all the ghosts or visions or whatever you want to call them in this, like, I think this is from the book, but the girl in the bathtub is the girl that, if I remember right, she's like trying to bang bellboys or something like that. So she's kind of the town whore, I guess, that happens to be in the bathtub that tries to seduce him, who died in the hotel. And like I said, I'm probably butchering what actually happened with it because I haven't read that book in forever, but she's linked to the hotel. Every body that you see in the movie has a backstory that you can dig up and find, including obviously the girls that were Grady's girls. I don't know where the guy in the bear suit giving the, you know, Hummer to the other dude came from, but they're all supposedly people that were became part of the Overlook Hotel.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. All right. Well, we'll get into what our favorite scenes were. So we'll turn it to John first. Favorite scene in The Shining?
I don't know if I have a favorite scene per se. My favorite things all involve different elements that we're using. Most of them kind of base around sound design in this movie. Like, I love watching the tracking shots of Danny riding through the hallways on his big wheel and the way that they mic different parts of the floor so that they'll hit those different tones as he goes from carpet to hardwood to tile or whatever. I like the Mickey Mousing they do where you see different things, like where when Jack will be sitting in a room and his fist will hit a table and you hear like a weird like piano note or something like that that just implies danger. So my favorite thing about this movie is the sound design and some of the ingenious stuff that Kubrick did to make this movie work. I don't know if I could boil it down to just one scene.
Okay, no, that makes sense. Like some of the music in here is just like absolutely incredible. Like even that opening shot when you get the tracking shot, what they're doing with the helicopter, whatever it is, because obviously
the impending doom going up to the hotel.
Yeah, is just like fantastic. The score is amazing. Gabby, do you have a favorite scene?
No, not really.
Okay. Man, that's funny because I made this question and I'm like, you know what? I don't really have a favorite scene either.
I do have a love for him running through the maze at night, yeah, with the snow and stuff, but it's really not because of the movie. When I was in high school, we had a friend named Danny and we would always scream at him like that through the hallway. So it's really just me being nostalgic to not have responsibility. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. We were told to shut up many, many times, including by Danny. So
that's awesome. All right.
Did
well,
you notice how drunk he sounds?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When he's chasing him through the maze?
I thought he sounds like, well, I probably thought that before. I think now it sounds like he's running around in proper coat, and it's just like the cold getting into his lungs. Like, trying to run through the cold will take your breath away like that, and doing it dressed yeah. like an idiot in a blizzard is probably not going to help anything. So I think I agree with you. Like, I thought he was drunk at first. Now I hear it, I'm like, this guy just sounds like he's just out of gas.
Yeah, but how drunk would you have to be to go outside in a blizzard?
I mean, if you're trying to kill your family, probably not very.
I would think very. Because no matter how bad you want to kill your family, most people would kind of need a little bit of something.
Let me power up before I go out there.
Right. That's why we have cocaine.
Shelley Duvall is an incredible, incredible actress. But, you know, there is like all this like negativity that comes along with this movie. So like how much, like, where do you think like the line is in this performance to where it's like, okay, this is acting and this is just a woman who is at like the end of her rope because a sadistic person is just being a terrible human being?
I think Shelley Duvall's a heartbeat of this movie. I think without her, none of this works. I think she does everything so flawlessly, like, great. It's very rare that you see an actor or an actress or, I guess, whatever, you know, anything in between actually look genuinely terrified on film. And I know that they had to put her through hell to get to that point, but I think without Shelley Duvall, Jack gets all the credit in this movie, but Shelley Duvall is really the one who should have gotten all the accreditation that she could possibly get for making this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she is incredible. Like, whether it's, you know, the fear, or, you know, whether it's like the compassion that she still has for her husband, even though that, like, you know, that there are things that are getting darker and darker. What about you, Gabby? What sticks out to you about Shelley Duvall's performance in this?
I mean, she's Wendy. Nobody else could have done it the way she did it.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I could not see like anybody else given this role, especially like at this time. I mean, there are people that have put in great performances for different films, you know, during this time period. But, you know, kind of like, you know, John talked about as well, like, she is really not only like her performance, but like her character is, you know, the person that keeps this film like going, that holds everything together. All right. Before we get into like ratings, is there anything else that you guys want to touch on?
I mean, I could talk all day about this movie. No, I'm trying to think of something specifically with it. I think it's a bummer that Hong Kong Fooey goes out like such a bitch in this movie. He goes through traveling across the entire country through snow and on high water to get one-shotted by a guy with a busted up ankle. That's kind of a bummer. It's weird though. Like, I think the overall, I don't know. I actually do have something I think is worth talking about. A lot of horror movies from this era, like I'd say from like mid 1970s to like very early 1980s, before the 80s really, you know, hit their stride, have so much of a like vibe of tension. You think about a movie like Halloween or Black Christmas, everything is built up on just ratcheting up this intensity and this tension click by click by click without even necessarily seeing what's going on with it. And I think this movie has a little bit about that, but I think this movie really separates itself from that era because it plays more on the fear and the paranoia of isolation than tension so much, which I think makes it really unique for a movie that came out in this time period.
Yeah, I think that's completely valid. And I'm with you. Like, this, honestly, like, even if you want to talk like outside of this time period, this is a film that really doesn't feel like anything else. And it has like all these different set pieces that you're familiar with, whether it's, you know, the supernatural, or whether that's mental illness, or family dynamic, or isolation. Like, I mean, we would see The Thing do it 2 years later, you know, with isolation, or Alien do it the year before, you know. So it has all these elements that we've, you know, seen and experienced before. But there's just like something, even when I watch it to this day, I remember like my first watch, like there's just like this otherworldly element to this film. It's almost like a film that's outside of time. And I really don't know any other way to explain that. But I mean, you're absolutely right when it comes to that. All right. Well, let's get into our ratings then, if that's all that we have. So on a scale of 1 to 5, John, what are you going to give The Shining?
I'd give this a solid 4 out of 5. I think the biggest detriment to this movie for me personally, and this is nothing against the movie, this is just a John problem, is I've just seen this so many times that like it's still great to watch and you can still go back to it and kind of find new things like we mentioned before here with it. The problem is I've seen it so many times that it makes it hard for me to want to go back to it now because just that. But I mean, this movie has earned its place as, you know, being labeled one of the best horror movies of all time, whether I agree with it or not. It's clearly iconic, and there's so many things that the bottom line is filmmaking wouldn't be where it is right now if it wasn't for a movie like this. I do think some of the endless debates about everything, all the meaning in The Shining, and you know, why is the carpet this way in this shot and then different in another, and the whole moon landing bullshit that comes along, like I think some of that's like, all right, maybe Kubrick was just making a movie, like he was smart, but like, come on, do you really think he spent that much time planning what way the cereal box is faced in the cellar? Like maybe he did, but it's probably got more to do with lighting than it does some, you know, hieroglyph that you've made up over the years. But that's just me. The performances are great in this. Even Danny is good in this movie, which it's pretty rare that I find a movie with a child actor that I'm not like, God, get the kid out of here. Like, he doesn't bother me in this movie at all. Like I said, Shelley Duvall's amazing in this movie. And of course, Jack goes crazy. So it's really hard to find too many real negatives with this movie without either being overly nitpicky or just trying to be like an edgelord for the sake of being an edgelord and piss people off. Like I've never heard someone give this like a truly bad review.
Yeah, very, very true. And I'll go next so Gabby can have the last say, since this is her pick. I'm going to come down at a 4.5 out of 5. And I really love this film. And it's funny because like that you say that like being an edgelord that you're going to try to nitpick this film, because I always think like, I don't watch this. This is not one that I watch every year. It's probably every 4 to 5 years or sometimes even more that I'll put on The Shining and watch it. So when I come back to it, I always, for whatever reason, feel like I'm not going to like it as much. And then I always end up loving the film. And I always think it's just a spectacular piece of cinema. So I don't know what that is, but the one thing that I will ding it for, and you kind of touched on it, is, you know, Dick Holohan's, his kind of character arc. Because, yeah, I mean, they set him up to be this, like, important character, and then really nothing happens. Like, he shows up and then dies immediately. So, other than that,
though, he was Danny's mentor and protector. The fact that he was killed was the fact that was the moment that you had to really start worrying about Danny.
Well, no, I get the point of that, but it's only like you have at that point, you have 10 minutes left in the film. Like that may be a little nitpicky thing for me. But I mean, that's the only thing that I don't care for. And so it's a 4.5 out of 5, still very good. I mean, still a very good rating. What about you, Gabby?
It's a 4.5.
Oh, okay. You're going to be
it's
like
too long.
It is a little long here, right?
It's usually my gripe.
All right. Well, that is The Shining. We did put this out on the socials, and surprisingly, like normally whenever we do like a classic, we get like a fucking million responses, but we only had like a few responses to this. And maybe it's one of those things like you guys both kind of touched on where it's like a classic, you know, what do you say about this? Or it's, you know, or there's so many damn interpretations of everything that's going on. It's like, nobody wants to be wrong, but we did get a few responses.
Oh, well, you only had 6 comments because you didn't post it until this morning. Well, this afternoon.
You can't count mine.
Alex Dog 1. It impressed me, to be honest. Most horror films from that period of time don't faze me, but The Shining was unsettling indeed. Movies You Missed podcast, A Beautiful Slow Burn to Insanity, and praise should be given to both Jack and Shelley Duvall for being instrumental in making this movie the classic that it is. Don't neglect Danny. Buffalo Bill, second. I don't like The Exorcist 2, but at least I can understand and respect why it's one of the best horror movies made. The only thing I like about The Shining is the ending chase through the maze and the close-up on the pig in the bar, 5 out of 10. Oh, I fucked that up. Let's start that over. Buffalo Bill, I have seen The Shining a couple of times through my life, and I still don't understand why people love this film. It's a very boring for me. I'm not a fan of Shelley Duvall, the kid, or Kubrick's movies. I don't like The Exorcist 2, but at least I can understand and respect why it's one of the best horror movies made. The only thing I like about The Shining is the ending chase through the maze and close up on the pick in the bar, 5 out of 10.
Did he see a different Exorcist 2 than I did? Because I remember The Exorcist 2 being a pretty big pile of shit.
I think he means like The Exorcist also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Exorcist as well.
Yeah. Okay, that's a whole different conversation. So,
yeah. What an odd cast. What can you say that hasn't been said already? Honestly, a great introduction of horror for most people, giving you a little of everything general to horror. You've got ghosts, psychics, some good effects with some ghoulish and teetering, gory looks, likely gotten the most paraded. That's the end of it. I don't know what the end of the thought is.
Very good. We also have one response on Instagram. That's from fans of the show. Dissect That Film commented and said, I love this film. It may not be the vision Stephen King hoped for, but Kubrick, along with Nicholson, Duvall, bring a creepy, uncomfortable experience that I always find myself going back to. It's one of my favorite movies for a reason. And that score. I could go on about it, but I won't. I can't wait for your episode. We thank you for all those responses. And like all those, if you would like your responses read on the show, because we do like to interact with our listeners, you can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at Woods Podcast One. You can find us on Facebook or the Slasher app. Just search for us on Facebook at Podcast in the Woods, or download the Slasher app and search for us at Podcast in the Woods. It is patreon.com/woodspodcast if you'd like to donate to the show. And if you want to help us out for free, you can do that by leaving us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. We really, really appreciate that. And it goes a long way to promoting us. And we thank you for that. And we do want to also thank John one more time for coming on. This has been a long time coming, my friend. One more time, why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, always glad to be on. Always love interacting and talking with you guys. So you can find us on any social media network, including Slasher, even though I'm not good at that one. We're at Dewey Pod Monster. If there's a social media network, we're probably on there. We use some more than others. So our website is crap.town. You can find our old episodes there, all our episodes there. And then you can also find us at the urunpodcast.com, where all our episodes are also housed, including all our other network friends. So yeah, I think that's it. Probably forgetting something, usually do.
Yeah, there's always like a million things. Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a blast, my friend, and we'll have you back on again. We'll have to do this one more time, maybe something a little bit more schlocky next time.
I do like my schlock.
So. I know you do. All right. Well, that is it for us tonight. So say goodnight, Gabby.
Good night.
Good night. And until next time, stay scary.